The first reading is taken from Matthew chapter 5, verses 1 to 12 on the NIV version. Now, when he saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you."
Thank you, Yvonne. So what I want to do is, in three little sections, I want to look at these. So first of all, let's look at the first one. What is the first one? Can anybody read it out for me? Not the meek, no. The poor in spirit. Yeah, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And you can read it in different versions, and sometimes it makes more sense in some Bibles than others. But I read it from a book by John Pritchard, who was the Bishop of Oxford until a year or so back. And he's written some good books on prayers, but he comments really helpfully on these Beatitudes. And he explains this one, blessed are the poor in spirit, as letting go of our need to be somebody. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought that's quite a good way of looking at being poor in spirit. Luke's gospel says it's just blessed are the poor. In other words, people who are low on resources and so on. But in Matthew, it's quite hard to see how being low on spiritual resources could be a good thing. But I think it's actually more about our attitude. And in particular, it's about self-importance. Have you ever met one of those people at celebrities who ask, "Don't you know who I am?" Or perhaps if they're held up by a police officer or something, they say, "Do you know who I am?" In other words, they're full of their own importance. And I think Jesus is saying, actually, that's not a good thing. Letting go of our need to be somebody. Jesus says that kind of person will end up with everything. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Second one, blessed are those. No, that was the first one. Second one, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. That one's quoted in the funeral service, actually. And if you, basically, it's saying that we need to mourn and grieve properly. This afternoon in our memorial service at 3 o'clock, we'll be doing a bit of that. We'll be remembering those who've died and so on. But I think most people are agreed that if you hold back grief, if you put on a smiley face all the time, and it's a bit false, really, it's what we used to call a swag, a sickly, weak Anglican grin. That actually, if you do that all the time, then you'll suffer in the end. It's a bit like the lid on a pressure cooker holding everything in. And it's not healthy. That actually we need to express our sadness at losing people and things that we love. So John Pritchard calls this one letting go of our pain. Letting go of our pain. Because when we get stuck in grief, when we hold on to things emotionally, it's a bit like almost idolatry, not letting friends get near us, not letting God get near us even. Because we've defined ourselves as a grieving person a victim. And that thing or that person becomes central to our lives. We're a grieving person. Do you remember on Easter Sunday, the risen Jesus in the garden? He said to Mary, "Don't touch me, Mary, because I've not yet ascended to my Father." Now, he didn't mean don't grieve for me, but he meant don't hold on to me. Don't stop me going, because you've got to let go. You've got to let me go. And Jesus' promise is that if we do that, if we grieve properly, if we mourn properly, then we will be comforted. So that's partly what we'll be thinking about this afternoon in our memorial service. Third one. What's the third one? Blessed are the meek. Blessed are the meek, if that's all right with all the rest of you, as the meek would say. Yes, blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. What's the difference between being meek and being humble? That's quite a tough question, that, actually. Maybe it's about your attitude in yourself or before God, as distinct from your attitude towards others. I don't know. It may not be worth distinguishing. But John Pritchard calls this one letting go of our need to be right. That's quite a good thing to practice, I think. Have you ever had a conversation with somebody where every single thing you say gets contradicted or corrected? There are people like that, aren't there? Try this. I love doing this. When you meet somebody like that, repeat their own words back to them and see if they contradict that too. I've had that experience, actually. You know, I don't know, they've said it's a sunny day. I've said it's a sunny day. They said, no, 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 it's not. And you think, hang on, that's your own words. It's not a good thing, is it? People who just have to be right all the time. That's not a meek person. Or indeed, folk who always have to have the last word. Maybe you've met some like that as well. You know, and if you say something, then they'll cap it and say, some always have to have the last word. Instead of that, try and let go of our need to be right all the time. You don't have to be right every single time. Our daughter Jenny, when she was about 17, she was right about almost everything she said. And we occasionally said, please, Jenny, just for the sake of the rest of us, would you once or twice just be wrong, just to make us feel better, you know. And bless her, she did. Yeah. So those first three, have a little discussion on your table about what those mean. We're called to do God's will. We're called to bring in his kingdom on earth. So how could we follow those beautiful attitudes? How could we be more like Jesus? Have a little discussion about that in practice. Lovely, thank you. Have a seat. Let's look at the next three. So this is another cue for coffee and donuts, if you like. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. That, I guess that's a sort of almost a cafe church motto, isn't it? It could be. And John Pritchard calls this one letting go of our concern for ourselves. Because sometimes you meet people who are so wrapped up in the details of their own lives that everything seems to be about them and their lives and so on. And I think one of the great blessings of Christian faith, one of the great blessings of religion, is it takes us out of ourselves and puts us in the context of a greater God and a bigger story. And in the process of coming to faith, we access some of those deeper created instincts for beauty, for example, for truth, for justice. And I think a hunger and thirst for righteousness is a bit like an instinct for justice, isn't it? Longing for God's righteousness in our lives and in the world. Living an upright life that pleases God. None of us is perfect. We're all sinners, of course we are. None of us can achieve perfection. But that hunger and thirst for righteousness, the appetite, the longing, is a good one, I think. And God blesses it. Jesus said, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled." So if that's something you long for, then you're blessed by God. Fifth one, blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. Anybody here ever been hurt in any way? One of us more recently, yes. If you're on Facebook, you will have seen some horrible pictures when Teta cut her foot, yes. Yeah, but most of us, at some time in life, we've been hurt in some way or another, haven't we? And it's natural, isn't it, when you've been hurt, to want some sort of redress. Perhaps if it's somebody who's hurt you, you want justice, don't you? You perhaps want to get your own back. That's just natural, isn't it? But if you ever have that person in your grasp, what are you going to do then? Are you going to take revenge? Or, as this beatitude has it, will you be merciful? Gandhi said that an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth makes the whole world blind and toothless. And he's not wrong, is he? Because there's some societies where people keep getting their own back on each other all the time. Jesus said, "Be merciful just as your Father is merciful." John Pritchard calls it letting go of our need for revenge. Because like forgiveness, God will treat us in the way that we treat others. Do we want God to be merciful to us? Well, if we've got any sense of ever having done anything wrong, then yes, we do. We want God to be merciful to us. So treat others in that way too. Let go of your need for revenge. And the number six, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the pure in heart. That's a good one, isn't it? So much of our world is focused on outward appearance, and increasingly so when we live faster and faster lives and things get more and more complicated and we have to make judgments at high speed, don't we? But God sees the inside and not the outward appearance. You remember when Samuel was trying to choose a king for Israel, and he went to, do you remember whose house he went to? Who was King David's father? Jesse. Not Saul. Jesse. Yeah, that's right. Jesse. And he went to Jesse's household and asked Jesse if he had any sons. And Jesse said, "Yes, here's a big, tall, strong lad." And God spoke to Samuel and said, "No, not him. He may be tall and strong, but he's not the one." And so number two, "No, not him." Number three, "No, not him. Have you got any more?" "Oh, yeah, that's the last one, the little one. He's out on the hills with the sheep." And God said to Samuel, "He's the one." And God said something very, very sort of deep at that point to Samuel. He said, "Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart." And that's what this one's about, I think. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Don't tell our girls, but when they were in their teens, they used to classify boys as either a date or a mate. The dates looked good, you know, they were short-term, they were good fun, they were good-looking and so on. Or there were guys with good heart and good character who'd be good long-term friends. It's not a bad distinction, is it? Are we looking on the outward appearance or on the heart? The pure in heart, they shall see God. So have another little discussion and think about what some of those mean, and in particular, whether there's any of those that might apply in your life. Can you think of examples? Can you think of incidents where some of these have been relevant and have applied in your life? Let's have a few minutes on that discussion. I think there's some, oh look, there's another discussion going on up on the screen. For the last few. Someone said to me, actually, when we had President Putin and Obama up there, we should have had Blessed of the Peacemakers at that point. That's how they like to think of themselves. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. I think another consequence of our fast-paced world today is people are looking for success all the time and achievement all the time, aren't they? And the trouble is, we can very easily become competitive and aggressive with that. And this one, Blessed are the Peacemakers, John Pritchard describes it as letting go of our need to win. Letting go of our need to win. So what are we trying to achieve if it isn't our own success? Well, maybe it might be some benefit for a bigger group, perhaps. Monty Python misheard this one as Blessed are the Cheesemakers. Some of you will know that, that film and so on. But Jesus said, Blessed are the Peacemakers, which doesn't just mean giving in to everyone else's demands, it doesn't even mean a lack of strife or war or battle. Peace in Hebrew, the word shalom, it was their greeting to one another. If you greet a friend in the street, you'd say shalom. And it means more than just resting. It means wholeness, complete health, almost perfection. So you're wishing something for somebody which is very holistic, very wholesome. I think it means prioritising relationships with others. That's what peacemaking is about, isn't it? The Pope, Pontifex Maximus, strictly the Latin means a bridge builder, somebody who builds bridges between people and indeed between man and God. Now, peace isn't always easy to achieve. We may not always manage to get peace, but it's a good vision, isn't it? It's a good thing to aim at. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. And then the last one, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who are persecuted. What on earth do you mean, Jesus? You know, how can that be a blessed thing to be persecuted? Well, what on earth do you mean? Jesus does mean on earth, those who are persecuted on earth. It means suffering on earth, doesn't it? But it's also an indication that people have said that's less important. They've prioritised the kingdom of heaven, preferring the kingdom of heaven to the benefits of this world. John Pritchard calls it letting go of our safety first approach to life. Because we've become a bit risk averse in our world, haven't we? With the result that sometimes we become unintentionally exposed to risks that we hadn't predicted or expected. We stop our children playing outside because it's dangerous out there, with the result that they don't know how to handle the outside world. They don't know how to cross a road or whatever. They don't know what things are dangerous and what things aren't because they've not experienced it. Jesus is saying if we play safe with this life, then we're in great danger for eternity. And he also said the opposite. If we're willing to lose our life for Jesus and for the gospel, then we've gained something far greater. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven, says Jesus, something far more valuable. And he finishes up, blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. I wonder if you've ever suffered a bit of persecution because of the name of Jesus, because you're a Christian. It doesn't happen that much in Britain at the moment, but it's certainly happening in other parts of the world. And maybe things will get tougher in this country before long. So just a little third discussion just to finish off. How would you summarise those Beatitudes that are in front of you? How would you sum them up? Do you have a favourite, or do you have one that strikes you particularly as important and worthwhile? Is the one today that sort of, whoa, that's the one for me. That's the one I'm going to put into practice. So have a look at them. See if there's anything that you think you could summarise or take away with you. Just to read those Beatitudes through again, but this time in the Message version. So a slightly different way of expressing it.
When Jesus saw his ministry drawing huge crowds, he climbed a hillside. Those who were apprenticed to him, the committed, climbed with him. Arriving at a quiet place, he sat down and taught his climbing companions. This is what he said. You're blessed when you're at the end of your rope. With less of you, there is more of God and his rule. You're blessed when you feel you're lost what is most dear to you. Only then can you be embraced by the one most dear to you. You're blessed when you're content with just who you are. No more, no less. That's the moment you find yourselves proud owners of everything that can't be bought. You're blessed when you've worked up a good appetite for God. He's food and drink in the best meal you'll ever eat. You're blessed when you care. At the moment of being careful, you find yourselves cared for. You're blessed when you get your inside world, your mind and heart, put right. Then you can see God in the outside world. You're blessed when you can show people how to cooperate instead of compete or fight. That's when you discover who you really are and your place in God's family. You're blessed when your commitment to God provokes persecution. The persecution drives you even deeper into God's kingdom. Not only that, count yourselves blessed every time people put you down or throw you out or speak lies about you to discredit me. What it means is that the truth is too close for comfort and they are uncomfortable. You can be glad when that happens. Give a cheer even, for though they don't like it, I do, and all heaven applauds. And know that you are in good company. My prophets and witnesses have always gotten into this kind of trouble.